Okay, one more time. We are up to Divrei Hayamim Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yudalit. Last week we spoke about that beautiful Pasuk Chazak Finis Chaska Ba'adamenu V'ad Orei Elokein V'Hashem Hatov Be'inav Yasem. David has sent out his two assistants to wage war against Ammon and Aram. All of this started, it's important to remember, all this started when David wanted to befriend Ammon by sending messengers. That's a very critical piece of information to understand. Everything that happens from here on in, here on forward is David made a mistake. I mean, it's a question of what degree the mistake was, but Lo Sidrash Leimam V'Tavasam Kol Yemecho Le'olam. The Torah says very clearly, do not seek out the good and welfare of Ammon and Moab. Ammon and Moab fail to greet the Bnei Yisrael when they travel to the Midbar and provide them with lechem u'mayim. That was a terrible thing. Part of the traits of Klal Yisrael are that they are machnis oirach. They are gracious, they are kind to people that are in need. Ammon and Moab, they did not show any hospitality. When Bnei Yisrael found themselves in a very difficult situation, traveling in the Midbar without any food, nothing to eat, nothing to drink, and therefore Hashem cursed them by telling Klal Yisrael, don't seek their good and welfare. David went to seek the good and welfare of the king of Ammon. When the king of Ammon died, Nachash died, he sent messengers to the son of Nachash, to send to be Menachem Avil, to give him comfort on the loss of his father. Why did David choose to do this? This is all Chazar from last week, because Nachash sheltered David's only brother, surviving brother, Eliyahu. David sent his family to the nation of Moab, because David was afraid that Shaul was unpredictable, he was unstable. David sent his family to Moab to protect them from danger, the danger which, who knows, Shaul may kill his family. He sent them to Moab because he figured Moab would protect his family, being that David comes from Rus HaMoaviah. But that did not work out well for David, because Melech Moab killed his entire family. There was one person that managed to escape, his brother Eliyahu. He fled to Ammon, and Ammon protected him. The king of Ammon, Nachash, protected him, granted him asylum in his country. And now when Nachash died, David sent messengers to his son to express his condolences. However, Hashem appears not to have been pleased with this because of Lo Sidra Shleiman. What did the messengers of Ammon, what did the advisors of the king tell the king of Ammon? David doesn't have your best interest in mind. He's coming to send messengers to spy on you, or spy the land, to see what's doing. And Ammon, the king of Ammon, made a fatal mistake. He didn't just send them away, he was mevazeh them. How was he mevazeh them? Like what the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, did, cut their beards in half, cut off half of their beard, and cut their garments from the waist down, meaning they were naked, they were exposed, the lower portion of their garments, of their bodies were exposed. This was a zilzul in the kavod of man. Unfortunately, they emphasized this, that the whole, this past week, Parshas Bereishis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after Adam and Chava realized they were naked, Vayedu ki erumim heim, they were naked, Hashem made for them kosnos or vayalbishim, none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself made for man garments. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave man dignity. Here Ammon is coming to uproot the dignity, the most basic dignity any human being has, even the lowest of the low, is to cover themselves, not to be naked. The most basic dignity, cover to Adam. And that Ammon took away from David's men in response to a chesed. It's unbelievable what he did, the king of Ammon. And therefore it called for war. And escalated to a world war. It wasn't just against Ammon, who came to war with Ammon, Aram. Aram wasn't a small player. Aram was a major player which had many branches all over the world. All different Aram Tzeva. We had all these different parts of Aram. I don't remember all the different parts of Aram. They all came together for this major war, and they took up positions, and David went, divided up his army into two parts. He sent out Yoav and Avishai. Yoav and Avishai were to go do battle. David stayed home. Why did David stay home? Because, that we discussed last, because David felt that he was partially responsible for this war, because he should not have sent messengers to wish condolences to the king of Ammon. So David wanted to stay out of this, but the people also, there's other reasons why David was not part of the war, because it's all a question of they didn't let David fight in war. They were afraid that he would be injured. Okay, whatever the point is, they're now about to go to war. Now over the Pasuk Yudalit, the war begins. Pasuk Yudalit. Vayigash Yoav Ha'amash Ha'imo Lifnei Aram La'amilchama. And they engaged battle stations. Everyone, they engaged, and who took the first step? The first shot, it says here, was fired by Yoav. And the people with him, Lifnei Aram, a preemptive strike. That's what it says. And what happened? Yunusim Ipanav, they fled. Aram, the enemy, Aram, they fled. And they were the larger group. Ammon was small relative to Aram. They ran away. Uvnei Ammon Rahu. When Ammon, their partner in war, saw Kinos Aram, that Aram fled, Vayanusa Gamheim, they also fled. They were cowards. Vibnei Avishai Achiv, who was fighting the other battle. The other battle was led by Avishai. David divided his army into two parts. One army, one battalion was led by Yoav, and the smaller battalion was led by Avishai. Avishai was going to take up the nation of Aram, and Yoav was going to fight against Aram. Yoav made the first strike. He succeeded in defeating Aram, and immediately Ammon melted, and they fled from Avishai as well. Aram is a stronger, yes. Aram was much stronger. Exactly. They were hired. Well, I mean, Aram was hired by Ammon. Aram was pretty much a nation of mercenaries that were hired by Ammon to help. I guess they had their own agenda as well, that we can be certain of. But they everyone fled by Yavoh Ira, and they went to the city by Yavoh Yav Yushalayim. So they fled back. They fled back to their city. Everyone went back, and Yav returned back. He came back to Yerushalayim. Vayar Aram, ki nigfu lifnei Yisrael. Aram realized that they were smitten before Yisrael. Vayishchu malochim ayotzias Aram ashamei v'hanar. So therefore they were not over. It wasn't over. Even though Aram was defeated, that they lost this battle, they felt the war is still not over. So what did they do? So they sent an SOS to their cousins. Vayishluchu malochim, they sent messengers. Vayotziu es Aram ashamei v'hanar. On the other side of the river. Now, which river is that? I'm not exactly sure. Maybe it's, I'm not exactly sure, but on the other side of the Euphrates. I don't know exactly which river we're referring to here. And they all came. Who came? Vishrefach Sar Tzava Hadad Ezer Lifnehem. This person, his name was Shefach. He had a reputation as being the top, the cream of the crop, the most honored general in the world. He was the Sar Tzava, the general of the army of Hadad Ezer. He was... Hadadezer was a nation, or was a king. He was the king, and he was the king of one of the nations of Aram, Lifnehem, and he came before them to help fight. David was told to David that now they got a new problem on their hands, that Aram called in for reinforcements, and they're sending down none other than the great Shefach Sar Tzva Hadadezer, the general of the king Hadadezer. Vayesayif es kol Yisrael. So what does David do? David went and he collected the entire Klal Yisrael. This, assuming it was the Melchemes Mitzvah, the whole Klal Yisrael was threatened. Even a Kala Michupasa, a Chasa Michupasa had to go to this war. Vayesayif es kol Yisrael. Vayavar Hayarden, and they crossed to the other side of the Yarden. Vayavo Aleihem, Vayarachlim, and they arranged themselves against them. Vayaruch David likras Aram Melchama. The passage repeats itself. David arranged his people, his troops, military formation against Aram, Milchama war, Vayilochamu Imo, and they fought with him. the nation of Aram fought with David. Vayonos Aram, but they were defeated. They fled. Milufnei Yisrael. Vayaharog David me Aram. David killed Aram. Shivas alofim rechev, 7,000 chariots. The Arboim elef ish ragli, 40,000 foot soldiers. The ace and the general David captured the general of the ace Shofach. This person we mentioned before, he was the general of this king called Hadad-Ezer, one of the kings of Aram. Shefach sar hatzavah himis, David killed. Vayiru avdei Hadad-Ezer, so now the servants of Hadad-Ezer, the king Hadad-Ezer, saw when their general was killed, and saw that their 7,000 chariots were captured, and 40,000 foot soldiers were killed. So what do they do? Vayu avde Hadad-Ezer ki nigfu lefnei Yisrael, vayashlimu im David, they surrendered. The remaining forces of Hadad-Ezer, of this nation of Aram, surrendered lefnei David, vayavduhu, and they served. They gave themselves over as servants to David. V'le'ova Aram lo'hashia es b'nei Amon od, and that was the end of the alliance. When Aram suffered this bitter defeat, no longer would they allow themselves to come to the aid of Ammon. Ammon, the only reason why Aram allowed themselves to enter into this war was because they were hired and persuaded by their neighbor Ammon, the king in the nation of Ammon, come help us. I'm sure they had their own agenda as well. As we know, everyone, not everyone was friends of the Jews, but they no longer would be willing to easily join force with another nation to fight Bnei Yisrael. No, they no longer wanted Bloshia to save us Ammon Od anymore, and therefore they stayed away. Okay, that concludes this paragraph of the Rashi's. Is there any Rashi's Pasuk? We started with Pasuk Yudalid. Let's see the Rashi Pasuk Tes Zayin. So Rashi points out that in Sefer Shmuel, where the same exact thing is reported, Ksivit says v'shevach. Here it's called shevach with a pay. Shevach means to pour. And there it's called shevach with a beis. Now by the way, a beis and a pay are interrelated. Sometimes the two letters are interchanged. Especially when you transfer between Hebrew and Aramaic. For example, the classic example is barzel. How do you say in Aramaic barzel, iron? Parzala with a pay. So the bays in Hebrew turns into a pay in Aramaic. So it's no big deal that the letters are interchanged between Sefer Shmuel and Sefer Divrei Hayamim. But Rashi here quotes a Chazal, which gives a more flavor why there are two different ways to refer to this general. There it says Shevach Sar Tzva Perusha Rabaseinu Besota Shevach Hu Gavoa, a chicken coop is a tall structure. That's the mitzvah. Birds fly high, and you want to. That's the mitzvah. You make a chicken coop is a tall structure. He was called Shevach because he was a giant. As we're going to see later on, the different kings, different generals are very, very tall. And it's called Shevach because he was a mass murderer. He's called Shevach here in Divrei Hayam because Shevach Shevach Damim Kamayim. He would murder people, spill blood like water, and that's why here he is called Shevach. I'm sure you know that in Ksav HaShuris, if you look carefully, the white part of a pei is the letter beis. So if you look very carefully, next time you get an Aliyah in the Sefer Torah, you'll see the inside of the letter, because there's a relationship. The invisible portion of the letter pei is the letter beis. There is a relationship between the letter pei and the letter beis. In Kabbalah, we learned this when we had the shiur on the Aleph beis. Pei is a letter that's associated with not such good things. Pei is a letter that shaykh more to koichos of tumah. Like in Berachas Hamazon, there is no en pei. The entire Birchas Hamazon, every letter of the Aleph Beis appears except for the letter pei, the en pei, the pei sofis. So the letter beis is bracha. It's the first letter of the Torah. It represents the ultimate blessing. So there is a relationship. There's always a relationship between extremes. Pei, I don't know, is Koichos HaTumah, whatever that means. Beis represents Baracha. I mean, what more do you want? The first letter of the Torah, Bereishis. Beis stands for Baracha. In the invisible part of the letter Pei is a Beis. Hidden within what appears to be harmful, there's always Baracha. The Toichacha we don't know how to read it. Well, one day it will be revealed to us when Mashiach comes that hidden inside the Teichacha is Baracha. Because it can't be that the Torah has only klala, can't be. Has to be that in the Teichacha there are Brachas. That's the Bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mahapech klala Libracha. Okay, so just here, Chazal, don't go with all that. It does make a very similar drasha. The two different names refer to the same person. Shayvach and Shayvach. He was very tall, or he spilled blood like water. Okay, so this concludes here that there's another interesting medrash that says, why was he called Shayvach? People melted. Okay, I quoted the Rashi, said it's because he was a murderer, a mass murderer. Another interpretation was he had people, if you saw him, your heart melted like water because he invoked such terror in man. That's another interpretation why he was called. And yet, Dov had no problem. Dov was able to capture him. Okay, let's go to the next perek. Perek Chof. Vayihi
le'eis.
Yeah, sure.
It says that Dov sent his army to the other side of the Arden, and they gave up the Aram.
Correct.
That means Dov took the territory?
David doesn't say. I don't think so, because it's not part of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. It appears they had enough trouble maintaining getting rid of the Palestinians. They never really succeeded in wiping out all the Palestinians in Eretz Yisrael, that we know. So did they go expand their borders? We do know they did. Some of the Shvatim were not happy. They did not have enough land, so they went out different parts. So I don't know exactly. It doesn't say openly. Okay, now we go to the next parak. Vayihi le'eis teshuvas hashana. It was the beginning of the next year. There was a gap. There was a break. So this is interpreted as by Rashi and Mefarshim that we know this today. Today, what is the most expensive part of war today? We once saw a whole documentary, the Persian Gulf War, and the wars in Iraq and Iran. What's the most expensive part of war? Is maintaining the troops overseas. You have to constantly supply them with fuel and with food and shelter. When you go to war, you need, for every tank, you need a truck that follows behind, a massive truck to provide tanks with fuel. These tanks, they use an enormous amount of diesel, gasoline. So same thing in ancient times, when you go fight battles, you take out horses and you take out chariots. The horses need what to eat. What are they going to eat? So either you'll have some supply trucks following behind you that are going to supply these animals with an endless supply of food and the troops as well, or you go out to war during a time of year where there is fodder, where there is natural grain, barley, whatever you need to feed your animals is growing out in the field. So they were severely limited when they can go to battle. Today also, there are all the limitations. You can't go to battle in the hot summer. It's not so easy to go fight battles in 120 degree temperature. So they had to wait now, le'es teshuvas hashana, when the year started, when the cycle of the year started again, and there was food available out in the fields for the animal, to supply the animals, when they went to war. Le'es tseis hamalachim, at the time when the kings came out, we read the Rashi, now Yoav went and he sent out, he guided Eschel Hatzava, the army, the host, the entire, all of the soldiers of the army, Vayashches Es Eretz Bnei Amon, and he destroyed the entire land of Amon, Vayavo Vayotzar Es Rabba. He came to the capital. The capital of Amon was Rabba, Vayotzar, he laid siege to Rabba, the David Yoshev Birushalayim. David did not go to battle, David was still in Yerushalayim, Vayach Yoav Es Rabba, Vayeher Seho, Yoav conquered, smote Rabba, and he demolished. He took it apart, it's a very powerful word, completely demolished the city. Now, what exactly is going on in this passage? Let's first see Rashi. Rashi, Pasuk Aleph. This was when the year, the cycle repeated. When there was grain in the fields. I guess this refers to the spring. Springtime, when there is grass in the fields and the animals have what to eat and it's easy for the kings and the armies to mobilize. And then David went out, and I write this already. These rashes are going into the next psukim, and the kings. It says, "Who are the malachim? Who are the kings?" So the malachim Let's see the there is no mitzudos on mitzudos David. Let's see the mitzudos. Teshuvas Hashana pasuk aleph ratzlan be'ez teshuvas Hashemesh el hanukuda ahi be'atzma shahisuba be'ez seis hamalachim b'shana she'ovra in the previous year only lachem Yisrael the lazel of ne'amun k'mashama u'k'mashal lamal. So we hear what Rashi the mitzudos says something very important. In order that this pasuk should not be a contradiction to the previous parak when it says le'ez seis hamalachim is going back on the previous year because the end of the previous parak concluded that the kings no longer wanted to come to the assistance of Ammon. So they're out. The only one now that is left is Ammon. Ammon is the one that instigated the war. Klal Yisrael, Yoav, and David will not rest until they completely obliterate Ammon for starting up with Klal Yisrael, especially when Ammon was Meshalem Roha Tachas Tova. In the meantime, Ammon enlisted or hired or persuaded Aram to come to their aid. Aram was severely defeated. Aram now went back home. Now, a year later, that's past year. Not now, once again, the kings are coming out again. They're not coming out again. This was a year after World War I ended. We're now up to World War II. But in World War II, we're only going to have two nations. Klal Yisrael is going to fight against Aram. Against Ammon. And this time, the kings, who are the kings? Kings refer to the kings of Aram, are not going to come to the assistance of Ammon, because they have been defeated. So now it's L'shuvas Hashana, a year later, Le'es, corresponding to last year's time, when last year, Tse'es HaMelochim, when the kings came out. That is where the Mesudas don't shine in this pasuk. All the Mepharshim I saw, I don't remember where I saw this, they learned a new Mahalach, I know they changed their mind. And even though in the previous parak it says that they were defeated, and they did not want anyone to go out and fight again, they recovered. They recovered, time heals all wounds, and they decided a year later, L'shuvah Sashana, you know what, let's do it again, let's try again, this time we will succeed. So the different interpretations of how you read this pasuk, but the mitzvah is very simple. It refers to the previous year. And now Klal Yisrael gathered together to wipe out Ammon, and Yoav led them. They came to Rabbah. Rabbah was the name of the capital, and they conquered Rabbah. Now it says here, very interesting, that David stayed home. In Sefer Shmuel, it's much more elaborate. There it says that Yoav was about to defeat Rabbah, and he sent a message to David, I'm just about to finish wiping out Ammon, I'm just about ready to destroy the capital Rabbah, come quickly so you can finish it off, so you can get the kavod, the honor of winning the war. Because if you don't come right away, people are going to say that I won the war. So the question is, why here in Sefer Divrei Hayamim we don't mention this? Let me see if I can find the pasuk. Where let's see, Shmuel. This is Shmuel Chavtes, Shmuel Beis. So it's mostly Shmuel Aleph then. Shmuel Aleph Chavtes. No, so where is that's Shaifach, that's a different person. So where is this? Okay, but David over here did not come out. So let's leave with that. David here did not come out to this war. Here in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, we're not mentioning the fact that David participated in this war. David stayed home. Mepharshim said the reason why David stayed home was because David felt guilty. It all goes back to David recognized that he made a mistake, that he was the cause of this war. Why was he the cause of this war? Because he sent messengers to the king of Ammon, trying to wish him goodwill, to send his condolences for the death of his father Nachash, and that was a mistake. Because of the pasuk lo sidra shloima mitayvasim koyimechol leolam, and David therefore felt that since he had made a mistake, he did not want to participate in this war, and rather let Yoav have the kavod of winning the war. Now, what happened here? Pasuk base.
Should this part be just the opposite? To regain his kavod, he should have participated in the war. By staying home, he's admitting his mistake.
Okay, I don't know. There are problems. During this war is when happened the Maisa of David and Bathsheba. David did not go to war, and therefore David was idle. He went to the roof and he saw Bathsheba, and that led to the sin of David and Bathsheba. Had David gone to war, the whole sin of Bathsheba would not have happened. The whole thing would not have happened. Had David not sent messengers to the son of Nachash, there would not have been a war. So one mistake led to another. That's what we mentioned, which mentioned last week. Okay, but there's more to it. But let's leave it with that. Pasuk Beis. Vayikach David. Now, when this war was over, David went and he took for himself. They brought back to him esateres malkom. Now, malkom simply means their king, the crown of their king, the king of Ammon, which was the son of Nahash, the one who insulted David by cutting off the beards of David's messengers and cutting their garments from their waist down. He took his crown, Me'al Rosho, Vayimtza'ah, and it was discovered, Mishkal Kikar Zahav. The crown weighed a talent of gold. Now, I do not have the exact calculations, but it's an enormous... The weight is many tons. It's extremely heavy. It's not possible for a human being to wear such a crown. So what exactly does it mean? So we'll see Rashi in a few moments. It means one of many things. Either it means that no one ever really wore it. What it means is that it was suspended. The way things were done in ancient times. It was suspended above, and the king sat underneath it. He sat on the throne, and he was the king. It looked like he was wearing it, but really he was not wearing it. It was suspended, it was attached with ropes, or with some type of chain to the ceiling, or to the wall, but it was not. Its weight was not actually resting on the person's head. That's one interpretation. Another interpretation is that it had a magnet. It was a special magnet that was installed on the ceiling, which was able to draw this enormously heavy crown up, and the person that was wearing it did not feel the weight of the crown. A third interpretation is that the crown was light. And what it says here, that it was Mishkal Kikozov, there was a stone. The stones that were set in the crown were equal in value to a kikar of Zov, but not actual weight, not actual gold. Just in reference to value. So Vayimsa Mishkal, the weight of Kikar Zov, Uva Evan Yukara, there was a stone that was set inside Vatihi al Rosh David. It was put on the head of David, Ushlal, Huir Hoitzi Harbim Od, and there was booty, spoils that were taken from the city and brought to David. Pasagim, Cholama Sherba, all people that were inside, there's much more to this possible. We'll just go to the Fibsu, then we'll go back, we'll discuss some ideas. Cholama Sherba, Hoitzi, all the people that lived in the city were brought out, and it says here something very bizarre, Vayosar Bamegera, and David cut them with an axe, with a saw. In other words, David tortured them to death. David did not put them to death in a pleasant way with lethal injection. David tortured them to their death by taking saws and cutting off their heads or cutting their bodies in pieces. Uvacharitzei habarzel, this is some type of sharp tool. Charitze means it has a blades, or it has a
jagged teeth
made from iron. Uvamegeros is a small saw. Bamegero, the first word in the pasuk, is a large saw. Bamegero is a small saw. All different types of... They went to, Home Depot, and they cleaned out all the different tools, and they took them and they used them to chop the people into little pieces and to torture them to death. David did to all of the suburbs of Ammon. And then David returned with all the people back to Yerushalayim. Farshim asked the obvious question, how can it be that David went and he tortured these people to death? We know that David, one of them we learned before, David says in the Pasuk that he had a very great name. Shame among a very great name among the entire world. And Chazal interpreted that to mean that David was unlike all of his enemies. David buried his enemies. David gave dignity, covered acharon to his victims. Those people that died in war with David were to receive a proper burial. Yeah?
Could it be because they
They were biased.
Exactly. So that's the answer. That this call to, even though David generally was very kind and compassionate and considerate to his enemy, he followed the Geneva Conventions, not when it came to Ammon. Because Ammon were cruel, wicked people. Someone is meshalem roha tachas toiva. You do someone a chesed. You come to them. You go out of your way to send messengers to be Menachem Ovel. And you take the messengers, and you cut off their beards, and you cut their clothing, and you mevaza them. You deny them of the basic dignity as a repayal for a kindness. That shows that you're subhuman. And if you're subhuman, you deserve to be treated in such a way. The world has to know that such a thing cannot be tolerated. Okay,
Is this torture also in Shmuel Obed?
Yes. Yes, see, there it is even more. There it says he took them and he passed them and he put them in a kiln, in a fire, in an oven. He burnt them to death. That was the oven, so it's even more, there it's even more, there's even more graphic than what it says here in Divrei Hayamim. What?
That was his red line.
So there's what to learn here. See, there's really what to learn over here, that people that are barbaric, they have to be treated with, they have to be treated accordingly. Okay, so this is now other mafarshim are a little more generous. They say that when it says here vayosar, it does not mean that David went and he took out a chainsaw and he cut them to pieces. What it means is he made them into slaves, and their job, their role was like choytvei eitzim v'shoyvei mayim. He assigned them to cut down trees. He made them architects. He gave them work. And he gave them swords. He gave them tools. And this is what you're going to do for us. You're going to be our slaves. So that has a whole new interpretation. It doesn't mean that he killed them. It means that he made them part of the workforce. Let's see here about the crown. Let's see back to the Rashis. Uvo even yikara batar. There was a stone. There was a precious stone, ba'atar, in the crown, ba'atiyah al-Rosh David. Now here the Rashi brings down all the various midrashim, yesh mefarshim al-Rosh David mamish. Someone, the David, was actually wore this crown. How can he wear a crown that weighed a kikar zav, which is thousands of pounds, tons? It's questionable. Yesh l'tumoya, heyach, roshay, saveles, how could David, how could his head support the weight of such a crown? V'rabbi seinu perishu, Evan Sheeves Hoy Sabah. There was a magnet. A massive magnet was suspended, was attached to the ceiling, and that drew the crown up. The Shamati, I heard Binar Vona. I'm assuming that's a place. This commentator spent time in this city called Narvona. He heard that Kiminag Boeretz Yishmael. There's a minig among the Arabs, Shatolin Keser Shalmelech Milamala Al Roish Shoi, Vuyoshev Kinegda Milamata Tachtecha. Does not mean that there's a magnet. It means that it was suspended. There were chains, or it was attached with nails to the wall, and the king sat underneath it. That is the custom among the kings of Yishmael. Does not mean literally that it was on a set. It means that it appeared to be on a set. Pasuk Dalit. Okay, that's ready for now. There's a very beautiful interpretation in by Eisen in the back of the art scroll Divrei Hayamim, and he explains why did David take the crown of Ammon. So we have to understand that everything that comes to David goes back to Lot. Lot had two daughters, and both daughters lived with their father, and from them came two nations, Ammon and Moab. From Moab came David, Rus HaMoaviah, and from Ammon, and that's David HaMelech, but the crown represents the legitimacy of the Malchus. And whose crown did David wear? The crown of his uncle, Ammon. David is a descendant of Moab. And David is the Melech. What represents the legitimacy of the Malchus? The power of Malchus? The Keser. the Keser Malchus, the one that wears, and you can be a king, but to show that you're a king, you need a lot of things to give legitimacy to your Malchus. Amon, the Keser of Amon, represents the legitimacy of Malchus, that is the Shleimus of the Malchus of David. In other words, what are we really saying? The Shleimus of David's Malchus comes 100% from Lot. Lot had two daughters, Ammon and Moab. Both of them together provided the full picture of David's Malchus. From his first daughter came, from one daughter, the older daughter came Moab, and Moab, the biological descendant of Moab is David. And the koyach of his malchus, which doesn't just, when we say it'll be a crown, obviously it means a lot more. We have to understand that during this time in the world, who appears to have been the major world power? Ammon. That's what appears. There was Aram. Aram was defeated. And it appears, from a very simple reading of the psukim, that at this point in time, the world power was the nation of Ammon. By David, this little nation, Yisrael, they weren't so little, but by Klal Yisrael conquering Ammon, there was a perception in the world that now the world power, the super world power, who makes all decisions in this world, in Olam Hazeh, is Klal Yisrael. From where are they taking, or from whom are they taking over that koyach from? From Ammon, who was the previous super world power.
Wasn't Aram the super power?
So it would appear now, it would appear that Aram was defeated. That was a Hakdama. First, Ammon was a world power, obviously. But Ammon felt weak in that they had to enlist, they had to hire Aram. Aram came to their aid, Aram was defeated, they went away, no longer do they want to go assist any longer this nation of Ammon. Ammon now has to fight on its own, and here comes Yov. Yov conquers the nation of Ammon. We learn in Sefer Shmuel that it was a very big deal, and Ad Kedei Kach that Yov begged David, you better come here, because there's a major history is being written. When I go and I conquer Rabbah, you know what that means? That means we are now going to become the superpower of the world. You want me to get the kavod? I think it's appropriate that the king of Klal Yisrael, David HaMelech, you should be present on site when this happens, when the power of the world, of the Malchus, of Arad, of Olam Hazeh, is transferred from Ammon to Klal Yisrael. This was a big event. And it was done. And the crown, this massive crown, which represents power in this world, was given to David. And look at that. The bottom line is, the Malchus of Klal Yisrael b'shleimusa is not just Moav, it's Moav in partnership with Ammon. What does Ammon and Moav have in common? Lot. And what is Lot? Who is Lot? Lot is the nephew of Avram. And who is and what is and who is Lot? Lot is the son of Haran. And who was Haran? Haran was the first person to die al kiddush Hashem. That's really the truth. What happened? Avraham was thrown into the fire by Nimrod, and Nimrod said, and the miracle happened that Avraham survived. It was a miracle. Avraham was willing to die, but he didn't die. Hashem saved him. Haran was on the fence. On the fence. So Haran said, if Avram will be saved, then I'll also do it. If Avram won't be saved, then I'm not going to give him my life. Okay, so you'll say it wasn't Hashem. Shemayim, the bottom line is, when everything is said and done, whether it was Kavan or not Kavan, who's on the fence, Haran died because he believed in the cause of Avram. He did, when the day was over, die al Kiddush Hashem. Avraham took care of his son Lot. Why? It's the very least I can do for my brother. My brother died for my cause. What did my brother leave over in this world? A son. The son is Bro Karadavur. So I have an Achrayus. So that's what the Torah says to next week. Not this week, but next week. Wherever Avraham went, you're coming with me, Lot. I have to make sure that you'll be okay. Avraham invested all his koichas in Lot. Why? Lot wasn't such a great guy, because Lot was the son of his brother, and his brother died for the cause that Avraham Avinu believed in, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the creator of the world. And Lot has a tremendous chelik in Klal Yisrael. It's from Lot that comes Malchus. Avraham is Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael needs leadership. The one that provided that leadership was Lot. He provided both with Moav, the biological son, to provide Rus. Rus and Moviel, from Rus comes David. And the power of Malchus is Amon. And where does all this really go back to? What do they have in common? What does Avraham and Lot have in common? And what have in common? Terach. And who was Terach? Terach was the person who invented this concept called Kavod. What does that mean? Who was the first king in the world? Nimrod. Nimrod was the first one. We take it for granted. It's a thing called Malchus, that the other people serve. I'm in charge here, and everyone's going to follow my orders. Who invented this concept? Nimrod. And Nimrod wanted to be a king, but Ein Melech Beloyam. No, I'm the king, everyone has to serve me. They'll live, I'm not going to serve you. Who was the one that galvanized the whole world that there should be a Melech? There is a person that is greater than all of us, and we all shall serve, humble ourselves, subjugate ourselves. It was Terach. Terach was the person who made Nimrod Melech. Now, Terach was such a great guy. Terach was an Eved Avodah Zarah. And he thought that Nimrod was a god. And he worshipped him. And he told his son Avram, you also better worship Nimrod. But Terach invented this concept called Malchus. He invented it. And Avraham channeled this concept of Malchus from Malchus to a Basar Vidam to Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Malchusa da'ara ke'en Malchusa da'rikia. So you see how all of these things, they all go down, they trickle down from the very, very beginning. Terach invented Malchus. He had two sons. He had three sons. The other one came Sarai. But let's just focus now on the two that we're dealing with. We have Haran and we have Avram. Avraham rebelled against Terach, his father. It's very good. You have a concept called Malchus, but why stop Malchus by Malchus of the Ara? Let's go a step further to Malchus of the Rikia, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There was a disagreement between him and his father. Avraham rebelled against Terach. Haran was on the fence. Haran died, Al-Kiddush Hashem Shemayim. Haran had a son, Lot. Avraham took over the responsibility for his brother Haran by taking care of Lot. And from those two together came Klal Yisrael. Came Klal Yisrael, the physical Klal Yisrael, and the Malchus of Klal Yisrael, both the physical Malchus and the legitimacy of Malchus was provided by Lot's two daughters, Moav and Amon. Okay, that's very this powerful stuff going on over here. These
yeah? I
can
say that Haran was Al-Kiddush Hashem.
When he only made up his mind, so Avraham. So there are problems. But the bottom line is, he did do Al-Kiddush Hashem. That's the bottom line. You're right. What were his kavanas? Well, now we're 100%. He had doubts. Absolutely. Haran is not idolized in Yadis. You're not going to find piyutim. Piyutim in the Nusach HaTfilah. Zachor, remember the Zchus of Haran. You're not going to find that. Absolutely. But the bottom line is, he died Al-Kiddush Hashem. And because of that, he had a son, Lot. And from Lot came Malchus, both David and Amon, Moav and Amon, which provided the full spectrum of Malchus for Klal Yisrael. That's the facts. Do we focus on it? No, we don't. We don't focus on it. But he does have a part. And that part cannot be denied. Okay, there's one other important point which has to be mentioned, Malcolm. Malcolm also refers to a Molech. There was an avod. The big avod of the day was Molech. We find this throughout Sefer Melachim, where they would sacrifice children. They would erect these idols, that metal hands, the statue with metal hands. They would heat up the hands to an extreme temperature, and they would take a child and they would put the child on these metal hands, and the child would be burnt. Would be incinerated. And they would, at the same time, play drums to drown out the screams of the child so the parents would not hear and have charata and take the child away from the priest. This was the Avodah Zarah invented by Amon. And on this statue where they sacrifice children, which was detestable in the eyes of Hashem, there was this massive crown. this massive crown called that was taken off its head and was given to David as his crown. Again, it represented the same idea. It represented the power of Ammon, which they fully invested in this avodah zarah called Molech. And obviously, there are the halacha questions: how was David allowed to be then from a crown that was used for avodah zarah? So you have to say that someone came along and was mevatel it before it was actually taken away from the avodah zarah and given to David. A guy went not toivel. You have to be mevatel. You have to throw a stone at it. I have to break a piece of it and I have to do something. But that is another translation that is used for the word for this crown. Ateres vayikach David es ateres malkom. Malkom does not mean to the king, the son of Nochash, but it means, Malkom means Molech, the king Molech, not the king, the Avodah Zarah Molech, which is what we are referring to over here. It's also very interesting that the name of this king, if you learn that it was not the Avodah Zarah, it's the son of Nochash, the Nochash HaKadmoni. And the Nochash HaKadmoni represented everything that Olam HaZeh had to offer. That was the chait of the Eitz Hadas. Chazal tell us every person really was meant to have a servant, a nochash, to serve. A nochash, a very clever arum, you call achai, the most clever. Arum does not mean, means the most clever of all creatures. It had feet, it can talk, it can think, it can do things. It was a clever creature. This was the Ben Nochash, the king of Ammon at the time when David and Yoav conquered their power, their authority, their legitimacy in this world. It was the Ben Nochash. It's a reincarnation of what's happening in Maaseh Bereishis.
I think one of the ways it could be mevatel is by buying it.
He purchased it. That's an idea. Interesting idea. So let's see. Let's try to finish up. Let's see over here the Rashi's. We did that Rashi. Let's do the Mitsudos. The Mitsudos and Pasik Beis. V'atihi al Rosh David lamala meirosh shachayis atuliyu kishu yoshev al kisei ki ech yisbal al Rosh shay masa shal kikar. Okay, same thing. How could it be that he would hold such a heavy crown? Okay, let's go further. Pasik Dalit. Okay, so now it tells about some more battles. There were some more battles. There was a battle in the city called Gezer with the Pelishtim. Okay, we're now going away from the nation of Ammon. Ammon is out of the picture. Klal Yisrael are now the superpower. But now they have to deal with some domestic issues. Living in the land, there are the Palestinians, the Pelishtim. Now, by the way, I take that back. The Pelishtim, they're not Palestinians. As far as we know, the Philistines. They're no longer, right? There's no relationship today between the Palestinians and the Philistines. As far as we know, the Philistines are extinct. They do not exist anymore. They were completely wiped out during the time of Shlomo HaMelech. There are no more of them. So there's no connection anymore. There's no connection. They don't exist. So they're not the same. But I just
named that territory Palestine, and the Arabs.
But it's not adopted. But it's no biological relationship. That's what the experts tell us. That's at least what they tell us. That they totally extinct. They were completely obliterated in the time of Shlomo HaMelech.
Yes, if I'm not mistaken, there's an archaeological dig in Gezer.
In Gezer, where's Gezer? That's south.
South.
I know
there's
the lower Galilee. Yeah, okay. I'm not familiar with these places. This is the name of a person, one of David's people, one of his warriors. His name, he appears also in Sefer Shmuel. Sibchai HaChushasi es Sipai. This person called Sipai. See, there's a relationship they have. This thing, their names are very similar. Sibchai, Samach Beis, against a Samach Pei. You have here the Beis again, this play with the Pei and the Beis. The forces of good are battling the forces of evil. The Pei represents the force of evil, Tuma, and the Beis represents the forces of good, of Bracha. So David's warrior, whose name was Sibchai, Samach Beis, and the enemy was Sipai, Samach Pei. Milidei HaRefaim, he was one of the children of the Refaim. The Refaim is a giant. Someone, there was a nation of the Refaim. There are some branch of the Pelishtim. Others translate the word Rifam as a word meaning he was a giant. There was a family of giants called the Rephaim. Vayikonehu, and he humbled him. Now it does not say if he killed him, but it says that he was humbled, meaning that he was no longer a threat. Next battle. Vatihi oid mulchama es pulishim. There's another, a second battle. Vayach Elchanan ben Yoir. We have here a person. His name is Elchanan ben Yoir. We'll discuss this maybe tomorrow. We're running out of time tomorrow more who he was. Some of this was David himself. David, who as a different Hayyam, many people appear by different names, representing their greater role in life. But this person called Elchanan ben Yoir, he went, he killed as Lachmi. He killed this person called Lachmi. Who is Lachmi? He is Achi Golios Hagiti. And we are familiar with the famous story of Golios HaPelishti. Are they the same person? Big, big question. So the Mefarish here, we're not going to do it now, but the Mefarish here says that they're not the same person. It was a coincidence that this person, he was a copycat. He heard about the guy Golias. He also wanted to be a Golias. So he called himself Golias, but he was Golios Hagiti. And he was, and the one that David conquered was not Golias. It was not Golias. He was the brother. He conquered as Lachmi. Lachmi, that was his name. He was the brother of Golias Hagiti. We do not know exactly what happened to Golias Hagiti. However, this person, Lachmi, was conquered by this man called Elchanan ben Yoir. And he was a giant. The Eitz Chaniso, the handle of his spear, was Kimnor Orgim, was like the beam of a weaver. When you weave large sections, large sheets of material, you have a very large beam. And this beam, it's impossible for the average person to hold it. Not only could this person hold such a beam, that was only the handle of his spear. So we only can imagine how massive his spear was, and then we can only imagine how massive his hand was and how big he was. However, this person called Elchanan ben Yoir was able to conquer, was able to kill him. Now we come to battle number 3, Vatiyod Milchamah. There was another Milchamah, Begas. Gas is one of the cities of the Pelishtim. Vahi ish midah. There was a man, a giant man, a man that was extremely large. The etzbe oisav sheish vashesh. He had 6 digits, 6 fingers on each hand, and 6 toes. Why is it necessary to know how many toes? One thing, it's important to know how many fingers, because the more fingers you have, this is a very interesting point, the more precision you have with your hands. If you have 5 fingers, you only can grab a sword with that much accuracy. If you have 6 fingers, you have even a greater grip, even a stronger grip, and you have even more flexibility and more precision, more mobility. What's the better? There's other better words.
Dexterity.
Yeah. Greater dexterity with which each individual finger. So he had. Now it appears that somehow, I guess he can run. I don't know what the significance of having more toes. There are people. It's not so uncommon today, right? Is that true?
Right.
To have more toes, an extra toe. No. Never heard about this. I'm making this up. It happens. It does happen. Or to have 2 toes attached. Is that more common? Some people have attached toes. Okay. Whatever the story is, this person had six digits, on his hands, 6 on his feet, for a grand total of 24. 6 times 4 is 24. Chayish min David Yisrael of sheish for sheish for a grand of eshem yarba. Why do you have to tell us the 24? Can we count if it's 6 fingers? Because if we only said 6, you may be misled to think they only had 3 fingers. Because if you just say they had 6, maybe that means he had a total of 6, both hands together. A total of 6, both feet together. That means 3 on each hand. No, don't make that mistake. It means 6 on each hand for a grand total of 24. That's why it's necessary. So why just say 24? He said 24, you say 7, exactly 7 and 5. Therefore, in order to cover all grounds of the Gemara says this, to cover all possibilities, we said they're exactly 24, which means he's extremely like great dexterity, skill, control, power. The Gabu Nol Leharaf, he also was born to a giant. Okay, that's the simple translation. He was also a child of a giant. And what? Vayicharef es Yisrael. He taunted the Jewish people. Vayakei, we have now a new person. His name was Yehoinasan ben Shema. Achi David, the brother of David, he went and he was killed by this person called Yohanan, brother of David. El Nuludu, all of these people. El means Ela. El is a new form of the word Ela. These three people that we mentioned, these last three psukim, were born Lehorafa Bagos. They were born to the giants. Harafa here means to the family of giants. Of Gas to the Rephaim, like it's short for the word Harifaim, to the family of the Rephaim. They were a family of giants, the Gas. And they fell in the hands of David and his servants. Over here, we're telling you about three major battles. There were three major battles with the Pelishtim. Each battle had a major figure, both on the enemy side and on the Jewish side. There was a giant representing the Pelishtim, and there was a great warrior representing David, and David's men prevailed over the enemy. And we have their names, and we have some of their features. Some learn, just tell you, we'll do more about this tomorrow, but some learn that the word Harafa should not be translated like I translate that, as I translate as the children of the Rephaim, the children of the family of giants, but rather to Orpah. Who was Orpah? Orpah was the sister-in-law of Rus. For Orpah decided, Naomi told her two daughter-in-laws to return. Shovna v'naisai, Shovna, return, go back to your land. So what does the pasuk say? That Orpah listened to Naomi, she went back home, and Verus Dovkaba, Ruth decided to go to cleave to Naomi, who came from Orpah. So some of these three people mentioned over here were her children. Now that's not so good, because I told you that the word Goliath is not the Goliath HaGiti, is not Goliath HaPelishti. Chazal explicitly tell us that Goliath HaPelishti was a child of Orpah. So that would then mean these three also, they were brothers. The Goliath is also, okay, so different interpretations exactly who's who. But if you want to follow this Medrash, these three people were descendants of Orpah. And here we have an amazing Medrash. The Medrash says, look what happened. Rus, Naomi had two daughter-in-laws. One, they led two different lives. One returned back to her hometown to Moab. And David went, and Ruth went back to Beis Lechem Yehuda. Years later, the descendants of Ruth met up with each other in battle. And David's brother, and David himself, according to some, is David. David and David's family went to battle with the descendants. The descendants of Ruth went to battle with the descendants of Orpah. And of course, the descendants of Ruth prevailed over the descendants of Orpah. So you see how history, little things in history, have ripple effects, small little differences. Two women took different paths in life, how later, years later, there were major wars which came from the two different paths that each one took. Okay, we'll continue with some of more of these things tomorrow.